Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Matt from PlusEVAnalytics.com, a Canadian actuary who successfully bets on sports. Matt, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
All right. Thank you, Richard and Bob. It's great to be here again.
You recently posted a blog on something called a points bet. What is that?
Yeah, a points bet is something apparently has been tried in the UK a bunch of years ago, and it's offered by a company called Points Bet based in Australia, and it's just starting to appear in North America, I think, for the first time. And the way it works is, instead of your bet just being a flat win or a flat loss, depending on whether a certain number is on the right side or the wrong side of a certain line, PointsBet will actually pay you or have you lose an amount proportional to the margin by which you win or lose the bet. So if you think of an NFL game with a total of 48.5, when you're normally betting overs or unders, a 49 and a 79 are the same result to you. But with points betting, if you beat the number by 10, 15, 20, 30 points, your winnings actually multiply. Same with your losses. If you lose by a wide enough amount, then your losses increase as well. So it's a bit of a different spin on betting. And it's something I'm not sure how popular it's going to be among the betting public, because there's less of a limit on your losses, where you bet $10 a unit and you could lose $100, $200 very easily. So I'm not sure how much the public will enjoy that, but at least from an analytical, mathematical perspective, it's a very interesting object to analyze, and that's what I've written about in my last blog post.
Now, the tails sometimes only go one direction. Like if you're betting a baseball total of 7.5, you could lose that by 7 points, but you could win it by quite a bit more than 7.
Sure could. And that's a phenomenon called skewness. And that's something that is a very important part of the mathematical analysis of points betting, where when you have a distribution that is asymmetric, like a baseball total, so total of 7.5, you could score 18 runs in a game, but you can't score negative. So the shape of the distribution is not your typical symmetrical bell curve. And that makes these points betting options a lot more difficult for the bookmaker to price. And the idea is that the more difficult something is to price, the more likely it is that an advantage player could possibly find an edge.
Is there a limit as to how far over or under the bet can go? Or is there literally no limit, no cap on it?
Yeah, they put a cap in because they don't want people betting with, betting $10 a unit and you could lose 5,000 units. So there is a cap. The cap applies to both the wins and the losses. And it's usually the same number. So if the cap is 20 units, you can't win or lose more than 20 units on a bet, which again makes things interesting because there are certain bet types where you couldn't lose 20 units anyway. Like this baseball total example, if it's 7.5, you can't lose more than 7.5 units anyway if you're betting the over. But if you're betting the under, there have been 15, 20, 25 runs scored in a baseball game before. So again, you get these asymmetric distributions. You get this cap that theoretically applies to both wins and losses equally, but the potential for large wins and the potential for large losses isn't always the same. So again, just some really interesting mathematics to look at instead of just your typical over-under bets, where really the center or the median of the distribution is really all that matters. But this gets a lot more complicated when you get into points betting, because you have to look at the shape of the entire distribution, every possible value, and what that probability could be.
Wouldn't an injury by a star player greatly skew the possible results?
Certainly would. and much more so in points betting than in regular over-under betting, because if you look at, you know, for example, an NFL running back, a prop for how many rushing yards they might pick up, the median of that distribution might be 70. So a normal line could be over or under 70. But when you're points betting, you know, there is a non-zero probability that the running back could get hurt on the first quarter, and that number could land 0 or 5 or 10, which, you know, for over-unders, you have to think about it because it increases the likelihood of an under. But for points betting, you have to think about it even more, because it wouldn't just be any under. You know, if you land 0 and the number is 70, it's not just any under, it's an under by 70, which will be a huge win if you're on the underside and a huge loss if you're on the overside. So definitely when you're looking at player props in the context of points betting, it makes it even more important to have an accurate assessment of the probability of an injury than even you would need to do in regular over-under prop betting.
How much does the gambler need to put up in advance? And normally, if your worst bet is worst possible loss is $110 to win $100, you have to put up the full $110. But now, if you have to put up 100 times your bet, that would seem to be a showstopper.
That's a good question, and I know I don't have much experience betting this stuff myself, but I know they have a post-up amount that may or may not be equal to the maximum possible loss you could take on a bet. So whether the book makes you put up the whole amount or whether they accept some risk and only makes you put up part of the amount, I don't know, and it varies from bet type to bet type. But I do know they make you post up at least a significant percentage, if not 100%, of the maximum that you could potentially lose on the bet. So yeah, it does. You know, it could be a showstopper, or it could just mean that the number of bets you could have in play on any given day at the same time may be a lot more limited than what you could get down at the same time just flat betting. So it definitely is a consideration for people making these bets.
Have you looked at how strong or weak the market actually is? I mean, in terms of the guys setting the lines?
It's a great question, and you can model it out, and you can have an assessment where, okay, points bet puts a number at 70, but I think it should be 58. Really, all that tells you is one of the two of you is wrong. And really, the only way you know with any degree of certainty is by either playing these things or tracking these things as if you were playing them for a fairly long period of time. And they offer so many different points betting options on so many different sports. You know, it's plausible they could be sharper in some of these types of things than some others, but there just isn't a volume of data out there large enough to be able to really prove that out. So while this option is fairly new in North America, it becomes a little bit of a guessing game, like any other sports modeling, really, of you know, how good is your number versus how good is the book's number. But that is kind of taken to an extreme with points betting, because the more wrong you are, those losses will add up a lot more quickly.
You know, this is a lot like trading options or commodities, and I would think guys in those fields would be all over this.
It is exactly like trading options or commodities, and that may even be where the idea came from. I'm not sure, but you know, in terms of the mathematical properties of a points bet versus an options trade, they are extremely, extremely similar. So you're right.
All right, let's move on to a different subject. You live in Canada. Is sports betting there the same as in the United States?
Yes and no. So if you look at offshore sports books, we have similar options to the U.S., actually even better options, because there are a couple of books like Pinnacle and now Five Dimes that do not offer their services to U.S. customers, but are open to Canadians. So if you go to that sort of offshore gray market, you'll find, you know, similar options to what you can get in Las Vegas or other places in the States. But if you look at domestic legal betting, that's where it's very different in Canada. So sports betting has been legal here since the 90s, sort of. Because taking sports bets themselves are illegal, but running lottery systems are legal. And according to this weird quirk in Canadian law, if you look at a parlay, that is considered to be a lottery ticket and not a sports bet. So it's almost like someone at some point said that as soon as you combine multiple games together, all skill goes out the window and it becomes purely a game of chance, which is obviously ridiculous, but the law is what it is. So you have these government-run sports books kind of masquerading as lotteries, and they operate on a parlays mandatory basis. So you have to pick either a minimum of two or a minimum of three games, depending on what province you're operating in. And it's parlays or nothing. Even with props, even with totals, they're all offered, but you have to parlay them. The tougher thing for public bettors is that while most sports books will price to about a 4.5% theoretical house edge, these guys are generally pricing to around 15% house edge. And when you start parlaying the games together, that house edge is going to compound itself. So you end up around 40% house edge, which is really, really tough for a public bettor who's just kind of picking his or her favorite teams to win in the long term. I would even say it's impossible. But for so-called advantage players like ourselves, it actually is not impossible to beat the game, even though it has 40% house edge. And that's because the people who are making these odds are generally not professional sportsbook operators. They're government lottery employees, and they sometimes make some big mistakes that sharp bettors could take advantage of. For example, in a lot of these cases, the odds are static. So if they put a game up at plus 130, it stays plus 130 for the rest of the day. So if there is a late injury or a lineup change, and that plus 130 is long gone at sort of real sports books, you can often pick it up at these government parlay books because the lines don't change. Now, this has become a lot more difficult over the years. There are people in the 90s who took these lottery schemes for millions. The opportunities aren't there to anywhere near the extent they used to be. The lottery corporations have gotten smarter. They will pull games off the board if a line moves by a certain amount against them. There are still the occasional opportunity, but I often think that if I'd been born 10 years earlier and if I'd been around for that boom in the mid-90s, I would be on an island somewhere instead of here talking to you fine people.
Well, I'm actually not sure of that conclusion. Richard and I were born 10 years earlier than you, definitely went through those booms, definitely profited from them, and we're not on islands. We're still enjoying life.
Yeah, Vegas, I mean,
which is almost as good.
I had friends who were specifically up in Canada playing those parlays. Yeah. I mean, they did well. They made a lot of money, but yeah, they're not on islands, unfortunately.
Although Richard's kind of in an island.
I'm in a bubble.
He'll go out to get a newspaper from the front yard, but that's about as far as he leaves from his house these days.
Right.
Hey, an island is a pretty good place to be right about now, whether it's man-made or natural.
Now, as a Canadian, if you came down to the United States and hit a $4,000 royal flush, you're going to get 30% tax penalty off the top. Does that put a complete kibosh on you gambling in the United States?
Well, I've had a couple of less than pleasant experiences with your tax system. First one was I was playing in a single table poker tournament at the Mirage about 10, 12 years ago. And I think I came second to the tournament, and it paid something like $120 or $130. And they actually had to withhold 30% tax off the $120 because I wasn't a U.S. citizen, which I found kind of ridiculous.
Wow.
I don't know if they've changed the rules since then, but that made me a little angry. And then just this most recent year, I was fortunate enough to cash, I think I min cashed in the super contest at the Westgate. I finished tied for 79th, which landed me $2,181 of gross profit off of a $1,500 buy-in. So not a huge amount. And again, they took 30% off the top, and they took 30% off the gross, not off the $681 of net winnings. They took it off the whole $2,181, which was also quite annoying. Now, you actually can get that tax back if you do a certain kind of tax filing here in Canada. There is a way to get it back, but often it just isn't worth the hassle and the cost of paying a filing fee to get the money back. But you know, if I ever won $1 million jackpot in the States, I don't know if your listeners have ever been through the terminal at McCarran where they have all the Canadian flights, but they're assigned all over the place. You know, if you left 30% of your jackpot behind, call such and such tax service and we'll get it back for you. So that at least is an option. But fortunately here in Canada, gambling winnings are not taxable unless you are quote unquote in the business of gambling, which is a nice benefit for playing here as opposed to playing in the States where it's all taxable.
Let's talk about the website 538. That's run by Nate Silver, who's a highly respected analyst, and they do politics and they do sports. Before the NBA finals, which are over by the time this is aired, but not quite over by the when we're taping it. Before the first game in Vegas, the Lakers were favored hugely, and 538 had a 73% chance that the Heat was going to win and a 27% chance the Lakers were going to win. Do you have any kind of explanation for that?
The only explanation I can give you is that whoever is in the NBA modeling department at 538 is missing something, and they're missing something pretty badly. So anybody out there who thinks that they can use a site like 538 as a source of plus EV betting picks in the sports world is sorely mistaken. And you know, there are famous examples floating around gambling Twitter of places where 538 was way off. I think a couple of years ago, the Golden State Warriors were heavily favored to win the championship, and 538 had them at 4%. To win, which is just way not even in the same universe as the truth. In general, my advice would be to always trust prices that are set by a market over a model that is set by an individual or a group, unless that model has a very, very strong track record of beating the market, just because there is so much more skin in the game when you're looking at prices that are set by markets, where there's the penalty for being wrong is so much more than putting out a tweet or an article with some probabilities in it. So, you know, anytime you have a site like 538 coming up with probabilities that are way, way off market, I would absolutely not bet those, and I would ignore them because they don't really mean anything.
Okay. Predicted.org, one of our sponsors. They have models where you do have skin in the game. So limiting yourself to the upcoming United States election, do you think there's any bets there that, or what type of bets would you look for to get plus EV?
Yeah, I had never really paid too much attention to Predict It until you guys mentioned it to me. So I checked it out, and the first thing I noticed were that there were some pretty heavy favorites that you could get at 94, 95, 96 cents on the dollar that I would put probabilities at, you know, 99.9 to 99.99% to come in. So Democrats to win California, I think last I checked, was 96 cents. Hillary Clinton to not run for president this year was 95 cents. And is there a universe where these things could plausibly lose? Yeah, of course there is. But the likelihood is so remote that you know, they should be considered almost impossible. And I listened to the episode you guys had with Jason Pipkin a couple of weeks ago, and it was really interesting. And, you know, this topic did come up. There were these heavy favorites, and, you know, what do you do with them? And Jason just kind of mentioned, yeah, you know, you can get $850 maximum down, and you can, you know, you can buy these things, and you can win $40 or $50 or whatever. And then he kind of just moved off the topic as if it was nothing. But, you know, $40 or $50 of virtually free money, and then you can do it. You can probably find 15 to 20 different markets you can do that on. Like, it can really start to add up. So I'm surprised that maybe there's a reason I'm just not aware of. But I'm surprised that more people aren't picking up these pennies, on these virtually guaranteed markets.
Yeah, it All seemed right. like he wanted to keep his cash more in play, because he seems to be picking up money on variance, right? Betting on variance and trading in and out a lot. You know, and when you do pick up those heavy favorites, you're basically tying your money up until, you know, November 4th or whatever.
For sure, and that might be a reason why the strategy might not have been optimal for him, because maybe the opportunity cost of having that money tied up would have been too high. But for the average Joe listening to this podcast, you know, I actually looked into it myself. They don't allow U.S. customers on Predicted. Otherwise, I would throw a few thousand bucks in there and just start picking up these $40 and $50 layups wherever I can find them.
But you know what the other problem with that strategy is that when you ultimately cash out, there's a 10% or a 5% fee for cashing out. And so if you're putting in 20 times the amount of money that you're going to win, but paying 5% of it when you cash it out, that may not be a, you know.
I think they charge, if I understood what Jason said correctly, I think they charge that big only on the net profit. So if you put in $850 and cash out $890, I think you're only charged a fee on the $40 of profit, which would make this still a very viable strategy despite that fee you have to pay.
No, there are two different fees, right? So there is a 10% fee on your profit on any bet, but then ultimately when you cash your money out of the site completely, then there is a 5% fee of the money you cash out.
Okay. So leave it in there until you have $20,000 accumulated, and then cash it out and pay the fee once.
Sure. Yeah. But as I say, it is a problem that you have to put in so much more cash than what you're winning that, but anyway.
And I guess there would be a credit risk too. This site Predicted, I don't know what their credit worthiness is. Could they go belly up tomorrow? Do they have the legal protections in place that you could get your money back? And I would guess that it's a little bit more safe than, you know, some bozo sportsbook in Costa Rica, but I don't know exactly where it's domiciled or what the rules are around that.
Good. We're actually going to talk about this, the likelihood of places going broke that you're betting at, right after we take a break for some brief commercials. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In October, the promotion is free play with a kicker. The promotion is for those who already get mailers, which are, it's another word to say, locals. You pick up your regular weekly mailer Monday through Wednesday, and if you do, you get an identical amount Friday or Saturday. Do this all 8 times. Pick up a double-sized mailer on Monday, November 2nd. This ends up being worth 2.5 times as much as your regular mailer. at predictit.org. It's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. The most active markets now are who's going to win the various elections, including all the representatives and all the senators. There's edges in several of those markets. Gamblers with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predictit.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards at blackjack. A recent free video posted about playing 6-5 blackjack, how it affects you, what it does to your odds, what it does to your betting spreads. There are additional videos behind the paywall, but you can use the free ones on YouTube to get a sense as to whether or not Colin Jones' way of presenting things resonates with you or not. My guess is it will. He's an excellent teacher. There will be no more blackjack boot camps in calendar 2020. Hopefully things clear up with a pandemic and they can continue in 2021. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Super Draw 6 Card Poker. This is a 10 coin per line game where you're dealt 5 cards, and in addition to drawing cards to fill in the cards you discard, you get one extra card per line. There are extra pay schedule categories for this, such as the 6-card royal, suited ace to 9, 6-card straight flush, 4 of a kind with a pair, 3 pair, 2 3-of-a-kinds, and a 6-card flush. You'll have to develop your own software to analyze this game because commercially available products don't have all of these pay schedule categories. We're back talking to Matt from PlusEVAnalytics.com. How do you take into consideration that you won't always get paid when you make a bet?
Well, that's a tough question to answer. Because
reminds me of backgammon.
And there are all kinds of examples out there. Phil Ivey is the most timely one in the news these days. All I can really say is that when you're evaluating a bet, you have to try and think about everything that possibly could go wrong, not just the mathematics of the bet. What if your math is wrong? What if your math is right, but you lose because of a bad run of variance? What if you win, but you don't get paid because the book stiffs you or they go out of business you can't conceive of the entire universe of things that could happen. And this is kind of what we talked about last time about fragility and anti-fragility, where, you know, you'd rather be on the positive end of unexpected surprises than the negative end. But when it comes to things like this, there really are no good surprises, only bad surprises when you talk about the possibility you won't get paid. So think about what could possibly go wrong. Give yourself a little extra margin if you can. Maybe you pass on those 2% edges and maybe you only play, you know, 5% edges or bigger. Anything that you're missing is more likely to hurt you than help you. So it's an asymmetry you can't really do much about. You just have to live with it and always keep that in the back of your head when you're coming up with your strategies.
There was a promotion at the M Resort where the best game was $5 9-6 double-double bonus video poker triple play. This is a $75 hand game. You're a 1% disadvantage, except the promotion made up for that. But the kicker here is that every player who hits a $20,000 royal flush is deemed unprofitable and is kicked out after the promotion. So the net effect is you either lose your ass on this promotion or you just get kicked out of the casino. That was a lot of fun.
The big question is, did they come up with that as bait to try and get all the advantage players to show themselves so they could get kicked out?
So there was a famous promotion at Morongo where what the hell was it? That it was, I think they were going to pay 3-2 on 13 on Friday the 13th or something like that, you know. But we got there 24 hours early to lock up seats, and by the time the promotion was ready to start, there were so many advantage players there. People were calling the pit asking what was the nearest airport they could fly into. And they ended up canceling the promotion at the time that it was supposed to start. So fortunately, we didn't lose a lot of money, although we had been locking up seats for 24 hours, having to pay a commission on every hand we played.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a lot of still visual memories from that promotion, including Stanford Wong screaming at the shift manager that he couldn't possibly do this. That was interesting.
I wish I could have been there. I'm sure there were a lot of legends in that room.
Everybody in the world was in that room. Yeah.
Yes. And so, Matt, you put in a question just before Richard rudely interrupted us. Did the M Resort make this promotion on purpose to root out players? And my educated guess on this is absolutely not. The promotion was designed at a casino that had basically unplayable games, and it worked well there. And they put it into a casino which had some of the games were playable under this promotion, but it was a cut and paste from another casino, and this particular casino didn't understand the differences between how it would make a difference.
I believe it. I see it all the time. The more complex the situation is, the more vulnerability there is to unintended consequences, because the person making the decision doesn't understand every aspect of everything. It's a tale as old as time. I see it in life. I see it in my job. I see it in gambling. It's very, very common. So I believe you for sure.
Yeah, it's still run by mathematically challenged people. So if you can find a way to keep your welcome there, there are definitely opportunities. I heard you had a cool car. Is that true?
I have a very cool car. I have a Tesla Model S, which maybe isn't as unique as it used to be. I got it back in 2015, and I guess you can call me an early adopter. It was something that as soon as I learned what it was, I wanted one. And back then, there were so few of them on the roads that I would pass another Tesla on the street, and we would wave to each other like we were in some kind of special secret club. Now I don't know what the situation is in Vegas, but here in suburban Toronto, everybody has a Tesla of some sort. So I don't feel as special as I used to, but I would highly recommend this car. I could never go back to a normal gasoline powered car. Just everything about this car, the acceleration, the handling, the fuel economy, even the trunk size, like everything about this car is superior. I love it so much.
What about long distance travel?
Oh, not so much of an issue anymore that no one's traveling anywhere. So there are these so-called superchargers, and they have them at interstate rest stops, all across North America. And that's the solution if you wanted to drive across country in a Tesla. It wouldn't be the most convenient thing because you have to stop for 30 or 40 minutes every 200 miles or so to charge the thing. So it's not impossible, but it's not the most convenient. But I'm not a big road trip guy anyway. I just use it to drive around the city, drive back and forth from work, and no trouble at all there. I can go I'm trying to do the conversion from kilometers in my head, but I think it's about 220 miles or so on a charge.
All right. Let's talk about correlated parlays. What are they, and why are sports books so afraid of them?
I love correlated parlays. So before we get into correlated parlays, let's talk about parlays themselves and the math of them and how they work. Because normally in a sports book, when you just pick, three or four games off the regular menu of games and say you want to parlay them together, what the book will do is take the odds of each one, convert them to a decimal. So plus 180 becomes 2.8, plus 400 becomes 5.0, etc. Multiply all those numbers together, and that's what you get paid on the parlay. And that is a perfectly correct mathematical thing to do, because the probability of hitting each leg, the probability of hitting your entire parlay is the probability of each individual leg multiplied together. So no problem so far. You're all good. Except I lied a little bit, because when I said the probability of hitting the parlay is all the individual probabilities multiplied together, that's true under one very, very important condition, that the legs have to be independent of each other. So when you're talking about parlaying different games together, they're pretty independent, with some weird exceptions, like you're on the last day of the season and somebody might make the playoffs, somebody else wins. But normally you're independent. Even the side and the total on the same game are usually pretty independent, so you're okay there. But what you want to look for, if you can find it, is a situation where the probability of all the legs hitting is greater than the product of the individual legs. And the way you get that is if there is some event or something that happens in the game that will help multiple legs. So a famous example of correlated parlays that used to be offered a lot on college football is, if you have a 35-point favorite and the total is 38, when the favorite scores, that's good for both the side and the total. And when the favorite doesn't score, it's good for both the underdog and the under. And they're correlated enough that I think a lot of places in Vegas had to start putting in some rules about, if the spread and the total are in a certain ratio, then you aren't allowed to parlay them together. Occasionally you can get a book sleeping, again, back to our conversation about unintended consequences. My favorite example, even though it didn't win, is there was a book for the Super Bowl a couple of years ago where you could parlay the first half will end in a tie with the second half will end in a tie with, yes, there will be overtime. And each of those legs paid about 8-1. So the first half and the second half are probably independent enough to not make it a big deal. But conditional on the first half and second half both being tied, overtime is a guarantee. So really you're getting your winnings multiplied by an extra 8 for free. Well, that didn't win, but it was a fun one that I still like to talk about. And the real root of this is that if you're a book and you're offering parlays, you are making yourself very fragile, especially if you offer a lot of props, because you have to consider every combination of all the props that you offer and figure out which combinations to allow, because they're either independent or close enough to not make a significant difference, or if they're correlated, which parlays you have to restrict. And the more parlays you add, and this is especially important come Super Bowl time when everyone's offering hundreds of different props, the more bets you add, the more combinations you have to check to see whether you should allow them to be parlayed or not. And all you have to do is make one mistake where you offer a parlay that you shouldn't. And if you're an advantage player and your eyes are open to this stuff, you can take advantage.
But that's exactly one of the examples we were talking about earlier, where if the book makes a real mistake and you take advantage, you run the risk of not getting paid. So recent example was the Korean something where you were still allowed to add the leg to a parlay after the game was already over or something.
Korean baseball. Yeah. This is Bellagio, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and that risk is always there, and you have to consider which book you're placing it at, what the house rules are, you know, if you're able to look up any appropriate legislation on what might happen for things like this, that would help. But oftentimes when you have advantage plays like this, they are things that no one has ever thought about before. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been allowed. So you are taking a little bit of extra risk when you do these types of things, because if you make a correlated parlay and you lose, you can't go back afterwards and try and get it voided. That's another asymmetry that does not operate in your favor.
All right, let's change the subject again. Let's talk a little bit about the pros and cons of domestic versus offshore sportsbook betting. Can you speak to that?
I can speak to it a little bit. I mean, there are people, Captain Jack comes to mind, who have a lot more expertise than I do on the sort of state of the sports betting industry. But in general, when you look at offshore sportsbooks, the number one con is that you really don't have much in the way of legal protection if the book stiffs you on your cash out or decides they don't want to pay you on your bet, void your bet after the fact. If they go out of business, there's all kinds of ways that you could you can get screwed, and it isn't like you're going to go to Costa Rica and hire a Costa Rican lawyer and have any reasonable expectation of success. You're giving up that legal protection that you would probably enjoy with some more domestic sports books. But in exchange for that, you're getting generally a wider variety of offerings. You're getting generally less big, usually because the costs of operating an offshore sports book are less in terms of labor, in terms of taxes, in terms of regulations. It's usually cheaper to operate offshore than onshore. So you know, you get the benefit of that usually through less big. You usually get better promotions with offshores. So you know, there are definitely pros and cons to going offshore versus going domestic, and every bettor is going to want to consider that based on their own circumstances.
You listen to many sports programs on the radio, and they're always advertised by people selling you guaranteed picks and the deal of the century. Every week they have a different deal of the century. Matt, does it make any sense to pay for betting picks?
Ooh, this question is going to get me in a lot of trouble on Twitter, no matter how I answer it. So I will try to be as diplomatic as possible.
That way everybody will hate you.
That's great. Equal opportunity hater. Short answer is no. I don't recommend that anyone ever pay for betting picks, ever. There's a famous flowchart floating around gambling Twitter that's maybe a bit foul-mouthed for some of your listeners, but basically starts with, you know, if he's so great, why isn't he betting his own picks instead of selling them? And then it kind of goes from there. Does he move markets? If yes, blah, blah, blah. If no, blah, blah, blah. And basically every line in the flowchart ends with don't give him a penny. And I generally agree with that type of thinking. Now, I am aware of a couple of people out there who sell picks. The picks have a good track record. There is solid analysis behind them. I'm also aware of thousands of people out there who sell picks, and the picks are just complete garbage. And usually either the sellers know they're garbage and they're just scamming people. My friend Vegas Dave comes to mind. Or equally likely is the sellers think the picks are good, and the sellers think they're acting in good faith, but they're just wrong. The picks are no good. And so when you have a couple of good pick sellers and thousands of bad pick sellers out there, the public has a tough time separating the good ones from the bad ones, because the bad ones are going to claim they're good ones. Everyone out there is going to tout their track record over such and such number of picks in the last 10 years. And you know, they're all going to say that. Some are going to be lying. Some are going to be honest. Some are going to be cherry picked. Some are going to be mistaken. And so if you're just picking from all these guys who are each saying, I'm the best sports handicapper in the world, your odds of picking one of the few really good ones are pretty terrible. And that's even before we start talking about how much, when you factor in what you're actually paying for the picks, your sort of effective house edge goes up, because now you've got to beat the bookie and you've got to pay for the picks. So this is how I'm kind of reconciling in my head my answer of no, nobody should pay for picks ever, with the fact that I do know a couple of people who do this and do it well.
I should say, by the way, I get contacted periodically from people selling picks that want to advertise on Gambling with an Edge, which I always respectfully decline.
And the sports betting community appreciates that.
Yeah.
The first argument you made of if somebody's picks were so good, why wouldn't he bet them instead of sell them? Reminds, I'm not sure I totally agree with that on the order of something like if Aaron Rodgers or Peyton Manning made so much playing football, they wouldn't need to make commercials. And of course they both made tons as professional quarterbacks, but yeah, you always wanted more. And so, they do well as a TV spokesman too. And so just because you're successful at something doesn't mean you may not also want to tell other people about something.
Yeah, that's a good point. The biggest difference between that and this is as a seller of picks, when you go and bet your own picks, you're actually moving the numbers and you're destroying the value that you're seeing. So, you know, Peyton Manning can go and play football and shoot a commercial and make money from both, and they don't really impact each other. But when you're making picks and selling picks, every bet that you make for yourself is going to diminish the value of the picks that you sell. And that's the big difference. And that's why it's very difficult in practice to both be a successful bettor and successful pick seller.
Yeah, I think an equivalent analogy is blackjack apprenticeship, right? He is affecting the market by teaching other people to play blackjack. But you can do both. You can be a winning blackjack player and teach other people to play.
You could. So I would say the blackjack example is somewhere sort of in between Bob's example and mine, because there's a lot more connectivity between all the different sports betting markets around the world and all the different blackjack tables around the world. So you could, you could become a great card counter in California, and, you know, that doesn't really change the space in Australia, at least not that quickly and that evidently. Over time, for sure, best practices will be transferred and things will adapt. But in sports, if you make a big enough bet and you move a line somewhere at a market that has respect, the whole world is going to follow. So it's a much more immediate destruction of value when you're betting sports.
Yep.
If people want to get in touch with you, is through your website at plusevanalytics.com the best way, or is there another way?
Sure, they can go to plusevanalytics.com. They can contact me on Twitter at plusevanalytics. They can email me plusevanalytics@outlook.com. I'm always happy to talk betting anytime with anybody.
And we'll have links to all that in the show notes.
All right. Thank you very much, Matt. This was very informative, very interesting. We hope to have you on in the future. You bring a different perspective than most of our other guests.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Anytime.
All right. At the end of the show, Richard and I, mainly Richard, have a recommended where we talk about something that we have found that we think our listeners will enjoy. And against all odds, I have one today. On November 1st, both Richard and I will be competing in a online virtual 99-second storytelling contest. This is a tournament of champions, so to speak. All of us have gone through preliminaries and did well enough to at least get to finals in an earlier version of this contest. More than half of the stories have a humorous twist at the end. It's a lot of fun. It's free. So I do not have a link, but if you're on Facebook and you look up 99 Second Storytelling, you'll find it.
True stories, Richard. By the way. You should add their true stories.
Yeah, they're true stories. Although they don't have fact checkers there online checking our facts. And so, and they're fun. So, Richard, do you have something for our guests?
Oh, yeah. My recommendation this week is a documentary on Netflix called My Octopus Teacher. And basically, it's about a guy who becomes friends with an octopus, which sounds like a very weird thing to make a movie about. But I found the movie fascinating, and there's some beautiful underwater photography, and, you know, I really enjoyed it. So if that sounds like something that you would enjoy, check that out, My Octopus Teacher.
It does sound like Richard is enjoying his second childhood. I'm very happy for you, Richard.
By the way, octopuses are really smart, like smarter than dogs. So, yeah, it was cool.
Uh-huh. So, Matt, do you have a recommended you can give our listeners?
Yeah, I've got my own octopus teacher that I could plug. She's someone that you've had on the show before, RX Gamble, and her blog,
yes.
rxgamble.com. I met her through the Advantage Player community. She has so many cool stories about the places she's been, the things she's done. And if you look at her blog, the writing style is just, it's kind of this dark, humorous, type of writing that you really don't see too often. And it's really a lot of fun to read. So I definitely recommend checking her out.
I would second that. I actually, reposted one of her, blog posts this week. It's a very entertaining blog.
Yes, and actually, last time I saw her, she came to a performance where I was telling a story. So she's into storytelling, which I found is interesting. And
yes. She has good stories. So yes, we're making her blush right now as she's listening.
All right. So thank you, Matt. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.